have Ms. Tracy Pugh. And Ms. Pugh works with the New York Academy of Medicine. She's a policy associate, and she works in the area of health disparities. Ms. Pugh.
Again, my name is Tracy Pugh, and I'll be discussing some of the findings that we had through focus groups with individuals who were recently released from incarceration, as well as individuals who are soon to be released from incarceration in the New York State prison facility. Slide.
Thank you.
Just to give a brief background, I'm trying to get to the background really quickly so we can get into the findings. We're specifically focused on the prison system, which is different from the jails. The prison system in New York State in particular is quite large and widely dispersed geographically, versus the jails, which are more localized, and the oversight is given to the local municipalities. The prison system falls within the purview of the New York State Department of Correctional Services. And as you can see, the geography of the system, as well as just the sheer size of it, can make it really difficult to do targeted reentry programming and providing discharge planning services as well. Individuals who are incarcerated within these different facilities are not necessarily within facilities that are near their communities that they will be returning to. Also, a lot of research and studies, as well as data looking at this population in particular, has showed that in general these individuals are sicker on average than the general population, especially when released, their risk of death is particularly higher, as well as their risk of HIV/AIDS and other communicable diseases. Also, this population has been growing, has been aging and growing older. Between 1996 and 2006, the population of 15-year-olds and above has doubled. And then there's a high rate of substance use. I think for New York State, it's about 83% of individuals have been identified of having substance use issues. Our point is, it's not only about the individual, it's not only about this population, but it's also about their families that they're returning to and the communities that they're returning to. If you go to the next slide, you see that in New York City especially, and justice mapping has been doing a lot of interesting mapping in other communities as well, is very specific communities that are disproportionately affected by the rate of individuals who are incarcerated. Here in New York City, you see the really bright red, East Harlem, parts of the Bronx, and certain parts of Brooklyn in particular, have been affected disproportionately high rates of incarceration. But then it's not just incarceration. If you go into the other slides, what we think is really interesting is when you look at different determinants of health and different health outcomes. These are the same communities that kind of come up in that bright red area. So again, this map changed a little bit, but you still see East Harlem, parts of Bronx, Central Brooklyn. Next slide. When you look at different chronic illnesses like diabetes, you see a lot of similarities from the previous slides. Again, when you look at determinants of health, like insurance, again, some similarities. Next slide. And then other determinants like income. There's, again, some overlap. So I think these maps are particularly interesting, and they give you a lot of food for thought when you see it illustrated, rather than you just see the numbers. You really see the same communities are coming up over and over. So we just really want to reiterate that it's really not just about the individual and the population, but the communities that they're going back to. So these focus groups were born out of the work of a health reentry working group that the New York Academy of Medicine has been staffing, and was initiated by the chief medical officer of DOCS, Dr. Wright, who's now in retirement just recently. And we've been working on a number of objectives. Our main overarching goal, really, though, has been really inserting health reentry in the general dialogue of reentry. So in New York City in particular, there are several reentry services, a lot of reentry provider organizations, and understandably so, a lot of the priorities are around employment, family reunification, housing, extremely important. But when it comes to health, it really becomes pretty geared towards very special populations for several reasons. And so when we look at health, HIV, the reentry planning around health generally tends to focus on the HIV/AIDS population, substance use, and high mental health needs as well. So really the overarching idea is to really look at what we've been doing in these areas and see if we could expand that to health in general, or at least start with the chronic illnesses, but with the intent of eventually talking about health and prevention for all individuals that are returning home from incarceration. Along with the focus groups, we've been looking at ways, strategizing about ways to distribute information about navigating the healthcare system within the discharge planning phase as well as post-release. We've been looking at ways to facilitate Medicaid enrollment more quickly. And we've also been looking at what other areas have been doing around linking individuals to care post-release. So this is just to give you an idea. One of the new unique features of this, that we think of this working group is that it's a multi-agency, multi-sector group. So we have we've been having the participation of state agencies as well as independent reentry provider organizations, as well as a few healthcare organizations. I have to particularly acknowledge the John Jay Prison Institute, the Osborne Association, the St. Luke's Center for Comprehensive Care, as well as the Correctional Association of New York and the Women's Prison Association for helping us to develop this protocol, and as well as for helping us in the recruitment of individuals for these focus groups. So the focus groups, again, it's a fairly small assessment. So we only had about 34 participants. We had, about five groups. Like I said before, we had pre-release and post-release, not to be too New York City-centric. We did do one post-release with males in Syracuse. I have to acknowledge Center for Community Alternatives for helping us. And then we did the correctional facilities in New York City as well, and DOCS was pretty, helped us with that process as well. And then the protocol was about 90 minutes. Not listed here, the demographic of the group, it was about, I think, over 50% self-identified as Black or African American, about a quarter that self-identified as Hispanic, 18% were white, and then we had a participant who identified as Native American. So this is a terrible picture of the Bayview Correctional Facility, just to put that up there. And so going to the findings, the four broad domains, I guess we could just jump right into them, starting with the patterns of utilization. So here we're discussing, we're asking them who's been accessing a healthcare provider, what has your experience been? And most of them did say that they have been accessing a healthcare provider, whether they were talking about before they were incarcerated, they had experience with the healthcare service system, or post-release. As to be expected, those with chronic illnesses, especially those with mental, who spoke about their mental illness, was seemed to talk most at length about having a regular provider and regular access. Other prompts for care were if people had injuries, especially during incarceration. That they sought care after release just to follow up on those injuries that they had, and then there were also those individuals who said that they don't really go to a doctor. This was particularly seen among the young men post release in the focus, which they said, I don't really go to a doctor, I don't really need a doctor, I don't really get sick. And then for some individuals who we spoke to inside pre-release, they did mention that before they're incarcerated, health wasn't really a priority either, just because of a lot of complications and just a lot of things that were going on in their life. Some specifically mentioned being involved in the street life, it just doesn't come up. And then for individuals who are also pre-released, they mentioned that, you know, they have so many other competing priorities like housing, like employment, that it's difficult for health to kind of, health doesn't really come up. It's not really in their thoughts. What kind of settings were accessed? There were clinics and hospitals were mentioned, generally within their neighborhood or within neighborhoods that they used to live in prior to release. They also got referrals from community-based organizations that they were linked to, or reentry provider organizations would refer them. It was also mentioned that they looked to their insurance. Medicaid was pretty much the only insurance mentioned. And they looked to their Medicaid, their carrier, and called that number to get an idea, to find out what providers are available in their community. They also spoke about accessing the healthcare services kind of as that third party role, whether as a parent and finding services for their child, and also being involved in the healthcare of their own parents. This generally came up when they talked about trying to understand the different issues that their parents were going through and trying to understand the medications that their parents were being prescribed and trying to be an advocate on behalf of their parents. So here's a quote, some quotes, just to give you an idea. I think one I mentioned, I don't really go to a doctor. Another one talked about how I came home. There were a lot of things I wanted to get done. It's just a process of insurance, and then it kind of implies that once he got the insurance, you know, he really utilized it, and it really was a prompt to really get him paying attention to his health more. So barriers of ability to care. Okay, my time's going really fast. Medicaid was one of the primary barriers. There's a lot of misinformation that they experienced, thinking that their Medicaid was activated, and it turned out that it wasn't activated, or their Medicaid was suspended, and then there was some miscommunication. One individual spoke about how they were released, but then they were incarcerated again, and then the recertification process kind of lapsed while they were again incarcerated. And so just all of these hosts of things of information and not really knowing what their status was as far as Medicaid was a huge issue. A lot of them spoke about how not even finding out about their status until they were actually at the provider's office, and the provider is the one that's telling them at that time that they can't treat them because their Medicaid isn't activated, and that they have to go and come back, or they would be sometimes be referred to the emergency room. They spoke about even when they did get access to a provider and they got their prescriptions, they had their prescriptions, but they couldn't get them filled because, again, their Medicaid wasn't there. So that was one of the main ones. Another one that came up was just the overall service in the provider's office. So along with the appointment times that we all deal with and the long ways that we all deal with, there was also concern about the way they were treated in the office. Words like respect or lack of respect, or they're just treated mean or just not in a not nice way, really turned them off from coming back and from going to a provider's office in general. On the other end, a few did speak about having very pleasant experiences and being treated very kindly. That made them want to come back and made them want to stay involved with their provider and coming back to take care of their health care needs. I should also mention that as far as stigma, in the conversations it didn't come up so much about being stigmatized because of their criminal justice history, but there was a lot more feelings around being stigmatized because they were Medicaid versus being under private insurance. As you can see, one quote said, they'll get the ones that have good insurance before they get to the Medicaid. So we also asked what kind of preparation were they given about with reentry in general, and if anybody prepared them pre-release or talked to them about how to address their health needs. Many of them said that there was not a lot of preparation that they were given. Many of them also spoke about they knew of certain services within the discharge planning stage that were available, but they also knew that it wasn't available to them. So they knew that there was something there for HIV/AIDS patients, people living with HIV/AIDS, and they knew that there were some services around hepatitis C, but they knew that it wasn't accessible to them. And so that kind of came up, there are these services, but I don't know how I can get access to them. We don't have access to them. And then, next slide. So the recommendations, a lot of the conversation went around that they are ready and they are, and we are willing to, you know, to really put in the work and, you know, pay attention to our health and really advocate for our issues, but we just need to be pointed in the right direction. We just need to know where the information is. We just need that access to that information, especially around Medicaid. And, you know, I mean, access doesn't make sense to have this in pre-release and discharge planning phases. And a lot of individuals agreed. They suggested that not only just as like a program or as a curriculum, but just the information is presented in a variety of multimedia formats that could be useful. We have to keep in mind that there's a lot of programming already in the discharge planning phase. So just being aware of how to insert more without being overwhelming to them, without overwhelming them with too much programming. So just being able to strategize about how to most effectively and efficiently allow them to have access to that information. And then they were also interested in having individuals from the outside come into the prison facilities to discuss how to access healthcare services, rather than having DOC staff be the ones to present that information. And, you know, a lot of this is not surprisingly an issue of trust and just comfort. So overall, we see that individuals do access healthcare services. They are interested in accessing healthcare services. And it was really heartening because even when we spoke to individuals who said that they don't really think about it, take it for what it's worth, by the end of the consultations, you know, they said this dialogue is really helpful and it really gave me food for thought that I wouldn't have had otherwise, because we just don't talk about it. So just that those focus groups, it was really heartening to hear that even in that one setting that, you know, maybe health moved just a little bit further up on their priority list. And so if we could just integrate health reentry through, you know, providing the information, providing a little support through reentry provider organizations and having them discuss health more with their clients would be very helpful. Talking to healthcare providers and just making them more aware of this special population and their special needs that they can maybe just think about a little bit more and think about how they can just help facilitate that process and keep individuals coming back to their appointments and coming back to address their healthcare. And insurance coverage is always an issue for everyone. You should know that in New York State, we do cover childless adults, but it is also one of the more underutilized. It has the lowest participation rates of all other eligible groups. And so this really presents a window of opportunity to get individuals enrolled and have them accessing their healthcare. And I think that's it. Thank you very much.